Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Tuesday. Taking a look at Boise State Athletics with coaches and players. Now here's Bob Beeler, Chris Walton, and Paul Jay on the home of the Broncos, 670 KBOI.
Thank you, and good morning. Special guest in the studio this morning, somebody we haven't had before, Boise State's new head wrestling coach, Mike Mendoza. Mike, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you in town, and of course, we love our wrestling here in Boise.
Tell us a little bit about the transition. You got hired from Cal State Bakersfield. You were the head coach there in May, which has got to be pretty late. How was the first, was it 5-6 months on the job? How's it been?
Yeah, it's been less than 5 months, and it's been, a whirlwind. So, like you said, got hired the tail end of May, and so coming right into, the end of the recruiting season and trying to, pull in some guys late and, meet the new team and figuring out how to get my family up here and all those things and get ready for the next season. So it's been quick, but it's been great.
Now, no class was formally announced for you guys, but you do have 8 new wrestlers on the team, right?
Right, yeah. We had one commitment when I came in, and then we picked up 7 more.
So how do you go about getting a class as late as you are? I mean, it's got to be difficult because I would think a lot of people would be committed to a lot of other schools.
Yeah, a lot are. Definitely at that point, the better kids are. And I'd say we got a little bit lucky on a few kids that we've got a rebound on. We have 3-4 transfers that came in. So we were lucky there. And there was a few guys that were getting recruited prior to me coming in, the coaching change, so just kind of making those connections again and following up on guys that, kind of got lost in the transition.
Now, the first chance for us to see your team will be on Saturday, October 29th. You're going to have an inter-squad scrimmage at Bronco Gym, Blue and Orange Day, whatever you call it. Get a chance to see the team. What will we be looking for at that?
Well, that's a time where these guys are going to be competing for the starting spot.
Sure.
And so for us, for me as coaching in our team and our coaching staff, one thing we like about it is it's their first time to actually compete, so it gets a match ready. Maybe you can wrestle matches in the wrestling room, but it's a lot different when you have a crowd, when you make weight, when you've got a referee.
Yeah.
And then you add when you're actually wrestling against a guy you've never wrestled before, that's a whole nother, animal in itself. So, wrestling their own teammate, is just, and they're wrestling, something's on the line, the starting spot. And so, at this point, there's guys that are jockeying for weight classes. We don't know where they're going to, fall in the lineup, but that's kind of the first step is these wrestle-offs on October 29th.
Coach, when you come in new, what are you looking for? I mean, you probably knew a few of them. You were a coach in the league at Cal State Bakersfield.
Mm-hmm.
But what's sort of the plan when you come in? I mean, do you watch people wrestle in person when you're working them out? Do you look at films? I mean, how do you decide where you think you might have your lineup and how maybe you can get people better?
Yeah, there's a lot of things. I mean, coming in is really just kind of getting to know the guys on the team and building a relationship with them and starting to set a culture. I mean, it's a transition on their end too, not just on my end. So, coming in, there's a lot of things. But the first thing is actually getting to know the guys on the team and building that relationship with them. And, and then, of course, it's a lot of observation, a lot of watching. I mean, these guys kind of know, what weight class they're going to fall into. But there's a lot of evaluation on getting them to improve and finding out what their skill set is and where they're good. And so it's been a lot of evaluation and note-taking and conversations. But, it's a lot of guys in the team, but I got a great coaching staff, and they're really in tune with the guys and evaluating them and, figuring out what their improvement plan is, goal setting and action steps. And so there's a lot to it. That's definitely, and we're still in the middle of it right now. So it's going to be a process, this beginning part of the season and throughout the entire season, we'll still be doing it.
We're talking with Boise State wrestling head coach Mike Mendoza. KBOI News Time, 8:43.
Now, back to Bronco Tuesday with Chris, Paul, and Bob on 670 KBOI.
We are back. Paul, Jay, and Chris, along with Bob Beeler and Boise State head wrestling coach Mike Mendoza. Coaches have strengths and weaknesses, and what kind of coach are you? Are you in wrestling, are you one of those guys who stands there with his arms crossed and watches it? Are you an excitable guy? What kind of coach are you?
You know, it's a mix for me. I'd say I'm more the kind of guy that observes, and my assistant coaches, and for most wrestling programs, assistant coaches are more hands-on and more involved and more, I guess, just a little closer to the athletes and the guys. And for me, more of a big picture on the outside guy, and let the assistant coaches do their thing. And they think they're really good at what they do, and that's why I brought them in. And so I try and stay out of their way because they know what they're doing.
So you're more of an administrator, basically?
Well, yeah, I'm in there, and I actually put my wrestling shoes on and get to wrestle a little bit. I do.
Only wrestling coaches do that.
Yeah.
Coaches in other sports don't do it. You get in a room, and you guys are always, you're ready.
Yeah, no, you have to. It's part of it's what keeps you sane, you definitely got to get out there and put the shoes on, and I'll do that as long as I can, as long as I can still, I guess – compete with these guys and
when
take it.
When the freshmen start pinning you, it's time.
You don't let that happen. Yeah, and I'll wrestle the freshmen and even the big guys, because it's really about position. But yeah, I'll do that just to let the heavyweight know that I took him down. But when he gets a little bigger and stronger and better, I stop wrestling him.
That's when the assistants go tangle with him.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Their junior year, I'm done wrestling those guys. They're too big. But yeah, I try to, I try to wrestle with the guys as often I can, maybe a couple of days a week. But yeah, I think the coaches, we all share that role of motivating the guys, and there's definitely a piece of that for me. I mean, I like to get excited, and I like to talk to the guys and get them motivated, but it's a team effort.
How did you put together your staff? Looks like it's got a little bit of a Cal State Bakersfield flavor and a little bit of Boise State.
Yeah, it's 2-2. So I brought my assistant coach who I had recruited to Bakersfield, wrestled for me for 5 years, and then he coached with me the last 5 years. And he's grown so much as a coach. And, he's got just a great character, great work ethic. And I was glad to bring him with me. He's definitely proven himself. He did a great job at Bakersfield in developing the upper weights. And having an upper weight coach is important, so brought him with me.
And that's Riley Orozco.
Orozco, yes, yeah. He's just from Fallon, Nevada, not too far from here. And then brought in Levi Jones and Andrew Hochstrasser, and their former Broncos and guys that were here when this program was winning championships, and they helped do that. They know what that looks like. And so bringing them on board, and it was really easy and great. And Levi is awesome. He's the guy that is, he's the guy that's the most enthusiastic on the coaching staff, the guy that bleeds that passion in the room. And it's been great. And Andrew Hochstrasser is a competitor. He's still competing right now. We're training him for actually the world team trials for the non-Olympic weights, mm-hmm. which is coming up here next month. And then the world championships for those weight classes are in December. And he's actually competing for 61 kilograms for the U.S. right now.
Just looking a little bit down the road, your regular season begins in Laramie on November 5th with the Cowboy Open. A lot of familiar tournament names here. What's your schedule like this year?
Yeah, we start off with some tournaments in November, and the Cowboy Open's a great one to get us ready. And then we have a dual meet in November with Purdue. And then another tournament, the Roadrunner Open out in California. And so getting those matches in, these guys will get, 10, 11 matches in between those two tournaments and that dual meet. And that really gives us a good, measuring stick of where we're at and good evaluation on their end of where we need to improve. And then we go right into some tougher tournaments with the Cliff Keen Las Vegas in December and the Reno tournament, and then the Midlands tournament. And then starting in January is when we start to pick up our dual meets. And, You know, it's a time where we prepare a little bit more individually. There's more scouting. There's more match preparation at that time, just taking a dual meet each week at
a
time.
Have you circled the Bakersfield dual meet?
Yeah, one's got, yeah, I got that one circled. That's a real personal one for me. And, yeah, that's going to be interesting.
And then you've got Beauty and the Beast back, a good match with Oregon State coming up. I know a lot of people missed it last year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's been the number one question since I've been here, you know, been hired as a coach and telling people, oh, I'm coach of wrestling. Oh, there's this Beauty and the Beast. Are you guys going to have the Beauty and the Beast? And fortunately, yeah, I could say yes, we are this year, February 3rd, Beauty and the Beast, and we'll be wrestling Oregon State that day.
What was it like? You were a coach in the Beauty and the Beast, but for the other side, was it unique as a coach coming in?
Yeah, you know, when you're on that mat, and just like the athletes, they don't know what's going on behind them or around them. So as an athlete, you know, you're kind of, that's out of your peripheral vision. You're just focused on your match. And even as coaches, you know, we saw it. We, you know, you feel it, the energy in that place before, because it gets packed in there. And it's a neat experience. But then once we started the matches and the whistle blew, it was kind of just focused on the matches. But during the intermission or during the break, you know, it's a really neat, neat event.
Mike, thanks for stopping by. Best of luck. We look forward to seeing you on the 29th. And then throughout the regular season.
Thanks for having me.
Boise State wrestling coach Mike Mendoza, KBOI Newsing, KBOI News Time. Let me try that whole thing again.
Okay.
KBOI News Time, 8:52. All right, we are back. Paul J., Chris, Bob Beeler, busy week. Story in the Coloradan this morning about the Colorado State quarterback, Colin Hill. Done for the year with the knee injury, but he's like one of a committee, right?
They've used three different quarterbacks, Bauta and Stevens. Stevens was second team all conference last year, but miles between him and Rippon as far as numbers and abilities. Yeah. And they've used three starters. They've kind of been moving people in and out. I don't think, like some teams, you lose a starting quarterback and you'd be, oh, no. Yeah. I don't know that it's going to make that much difference. You can make a case that Stevens is more experienced. They'll also use three running backs as well. Numbers fairly close. I think somebody's in the 300s, somebody's in the 2s, and somebody's in the, you know, high 100s. So this is a team that probably doesn't have the standout individuals like maybe they did. Rashard Higgins, thinking of him last year, last couple years as a receiver. But they look good in their second half, coming back out, scoring Utah State 21-0 to win that game.
Yeah, I was surprised. That's a nice win for them. I thought Colorado State or Utah State would win that game, but that didn't happen. So it'll be interesting. Late game again on Saturday.
We're getting used to those at home. Yeah. So that'll be an 8:15 kickoff. Our coverage on Saturday right here on 670 KBOI will begin at 3 o'clock from the Ford Fan Zone.
Could be a weather game. Could have some rain and wind.
Could, which is unusual. Haven't had too many of those since I've been here, Paul J. I mean, a lot more. Like, I looked at the highlights of that North Carolina State-Notre Dame game. We had usually one of those, not that bad, but usually had one of those a year, at least in the East. And I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, there were a lot of grass fields that sometimes became mud fields very, very quickly. Our coaches show Thursday night right here at 7. Sean Whale, Tyler Horton will be the player guest, and Zach Hill will be the assistant coach guest with Coach Hartson and myself.
All right, game day coverage, 3 o'clock. Pre-game show coming up at 7:30, 7?
7.
7.
And try to trick me to make sure that I'm on the air ready to go, right?
It'd be an hour and a half before the game starts.
I know.
It's 8:56, Idaho Talks Live, coming up after a news break.
If you're talking about it,
it's always about the money. Everything else is just conversation.
We're talking about it.
No excuses. Just find a way to get it done.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
All right, top of the morning, 9:06. Chris is stripped down to his wrestling, what do they call that, singlet?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, and he's putting moves on his chair.
I'm just trying to get comfortable, that's all.
Yeah.
I found this kind of interesting this morning. I was listening to First Light. That's a show that's on this station
right
between 4 and 5 a.m., which I know some of you have never heard. But, you know, if you get up really early sometime or stay up really late, you might listen to it. It's pretty good. And they have a call-in portion, just as we do. And people were calling in who were Republicans, and they were talking about the fact that a lot of the congressmen and senators and other prominent Republicans have been denouncing Trump and withdrawing their support and their endorsement of him in just the past few days since this whole, you know,
right.
videotape thing came
right.
out. And what was interesting is I didn't hear a single one of those people say, well, you know, I'm glad they did that because, you know, I'm a lifelong Republican and I support this senator and this congressman and I sure don't like Trump and what he says, blah, blah, blah.
It's almost, not working that way.
Almost to a person, every one of them said, I can't believe that our stupid congressmen and senators are not going to support our party's nominee. That's insane. And they said, here's the deal. We're going to vote for Trump, but we're not going to vote for any of the other Republicans in our state who have withdrawn their endorsement.
So, with the primaries well behind us, that means they'll have to vote for Democrats.
I suppose so.
Or not vote at all.
Yeah, or just you know, not vote in those particular races.
Isn't that cutting off your nose to spite your face?
It seems like it, which is kind of why I was surprised about it.
Yeah.
But they want a Republican president so bad after 8 years of a Democrat president that they are willing to just say, listen, I don't care what the deal is. Everybody else is wrong here. We have to support the Republican nominee. And I don't know. I guess I expected maybe.
How do you
maybe,
feel about that? That's
weird. I don't know. I didn't expect maybe everybody to call up and denounce Trump, but I expected a few of them at least to go, well, yeah, I mean, boy, I'm sure glad our senator did this or did that and shows that he has integrity and things like that. But mostly what you're hearing is, you know, these morons jump off the bandwagon at the first. Well, this isn't the first time they could have jumped off the bandwagon.
Yeah, we had a couple of crapo callers the other day getting on him.
Right.
For, you know, and I had a DUI. Well, sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, life happens, as they say.
Yeah, exactly. Donald Trump tweeted this morning that the shackles have been removed from him.
Yeah.
Freeing him to campaign the way he chooses.
Well,
following several days where his words and actions have thrown the GOP, as you said,
yeah.
into chaos.
Well, chaos simply because you've got Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House, and other
yeah.
people saying, you know, we no longer support Trump. Okay, is there still some Republican you'd like everyone to vote for? No. Okay, fine. So the ones who have been lifelong Republicans are saying, well, Paul Ryan, I guess we're just not going to support you. Even the people who called in from his district.
Yeah.
Said that. They said, we're no longer interested in Paul Ryan. We'd rather have Donald Trump.
Yep. So nice the shackles have been taken off me. I can now fight for America the way I want to. Trump also called House Speaker Paul Ryan very weak and ineffective after the Wisconsin Republican announced he'd no longer defend the campaign
right.
for the GOP presidential nominee, as you said. Our very weak and ineffective leader, Paul Ryan, had a bad conference call where his members went wild at his disloyalty.
There you are.
Huh? Despite winning the second debate in a landslide, every poll, he said, it's hard to do well when Paul Ryan and the others give zero report.
Here is what a lot of Republicans out there are saying, and they don't necessarily think that Donald Trump is going to be the savior of the nation, but they are trying to remind all the other Republicans that if you don't vote for Donald Trump, then get used to the words President Hillary Clinton. And they don't want that. You know, no matter what Trump does, they would rather vote for Trump than vote for Hillary Clinton as president.
And anybody who follows politics of any kind knows that Trump has been a Democrat before.
He has.
Or
yeah.
at least has had
well,
Democratic leaning.
That was the joke over the weekend. Somebody said that, 11 years ago, when he was on that bus and said the things that are in that videotape from 2005.
Democrat.
He was actually a Democrat at that time.
He was. All right. Here, Trump, who has, listen to this.
Okay.
This is kind of weird for him to say. Trump, who has previously backed Democratic candidates, said the Liberal Party has proven to be far more loyal than the GOP, With the exception of cheating Bernie out of the nomination, the Democrats have always proven to be far more loyal to each other than the Republicans.
Well, and it was proven that there was a lot going on with the DNC. They had the emails and they had the communiques and whatnot that said that no matter how popular Bernie was, that Hillary was going to be the and that was based on those superdelegates and other I don't know whether you'd call it chicanery or not.
Kind of.
But hey, I've brought it up, so why don't we call it that?
Smoke-filled rumory. Ryan dealt his own party's presidential nominee a huge blow on Monday, telling fellow House Republicans he will no longer defend his party's nominee. He will instead use the final month of the 2016 election to focus on preserving the Republicans' hold on Congress, which you're saying might backfire big time.
It very well could.
Paul Ryan is focusing the next month on defeating Democrats, and all Republicans running for office should probably do the same, Ryan spokesperson Brendan Buck said Tuesday, a statement echoing Ryan's comments on Monday. Speaker is going to spend the next month focused entirely on protecting our congressional majorities.
Sometimes I think, and this is going to sound weird because he doesn't sound like him or do anything of that nature, but sometimes Trump kind of reminds me of Maxwell Smart, simply because no matter what he says or does, unlike other candidates in the past who have said, well, this has come to light and so I resign, or, you know, I guess you guys know that I drove too fast or did something, anything, and I'm going to drop out of the race because, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then Trump, I mean, something every weekend comes up and he just basically says, sorry about that, just like Maxwell Smart, and then goes on with his business.
He's Teflon. Nothing sticks to
him. Well, the Teflon Don,
Yeah, Teflon Don.
Actually, that was originally John Gotti, but still, you know.
Yeah. He's Teflon, though. Republican elected officials, party elders lined up over the weekend to denounce Trump's incendiary remarks. 47, I saw on one of the TVs this morning, 47% denounced him. Well, however, 67% of Republicans are still in favor of
him. I don't know who it was, and I just saw a quick clip of this on the news, but there was one, I think it was a congressman. They said, are you going to denounce Trump? And he said, no. You know, like, what a stupid question. And what he said was, yeah, big deal. I already knew Trump was rude. I don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Trump's evoking the symbolism of shackles, saying the shackles are off.
Yeah.
Traditionally seen in American politics as an allusion to slavery, to describe Republican leaders could be problematic for a party that is struggling to attract black voters.
Well, you know,
that might be a stretch,
but he kind of talks that way sometimes. Yeah. It's like when he said that, you know, what was it? There was something in the 60s that was his own personal Vietnam.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't even close.
Yeah. And the shackles, you know, that's just something he came up with.
Yeah.
They didn't run that by a group of people who'd go, oh, no.
Well, we asked a few months ago, you know, when it was just one thing after another. And they kept running on the news. Oh, Trump said this. Trump said that. And, of course, what did it do but get him more TV time?
No question.
So it could be the most shrewd thing anyone ever did. However, we were asking people at that time, what would he have to do for you not to support him? And if you recall, people really couldn't think of what he would have to do. It just seems like people in this election are going to, I mean, there are people obviously who love Trump, there are people who love Hillary Clinton, but there are more people who are just going to vote against who they hate.
KBOI News Time, 916.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 10, listen to Rush on 670 KBOI.
All right, KBOI News Time, 923. We've got a million, four phone calls. Let's go to Ed of Boise. Hang on, Ed. Let's go to Ed of Boise. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I wanted to respond here. Yesterday, I tried to call Senator Crapo's office here in Boise, all of the satellites in Idaho, his Washington, D.C. office, several times during the day. Could never get anyone. All of the extension mailboxes were full. You couldn't leave a message at any of them.
What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that I got this morning, though. I called at 28 here and got a nice young man on the phone who picked it up. I said, "You're awfully brave today," and he chuckled. And I told him how extremely disappointed I was in Senator Crapo and helping to elect Clinton. And he says, "Oh, well, no, he's not trying to elect Clinton." And then he started to read the statement that Senator Crapo made about remaining true to his principles.
Right.
So I stopped him right in the middle of that and then said, "True to his principles." I guess he was true to his principles when he was arrested for drunk driving. And I said, if he's entitled to grace and forgiveness for that, and which was much more dangerous driving drunk than as Trump not entitled to a little grace and forgiveness for some of his bad words. Words couldn't kill, but drunk driving can.
What'd he say?
He was kind of quiet on that. He didn't respond. And he says, "Well," and I said, "Didn't you listen to Mike Pence last night who said that the very same thing? Is Trump not entitled to grace or forgiveness for his words?" And having been in basic training in the Army, I don't think there's a man around that hasn't heard some of that stuff. It's not good. You don't condone it. But, hey, that didn't kill anybody.
Well, that's true. But I think the rest of us don't have the confidence or money or whatever to think we're entitled to that.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the difference.
So the point was, I asked him, is he going to, is this to help elect Clinton? And he says, "Oh, no, he wouldn't vote for Clinton." But I said, "Well, if you don't vote for Trump, you're actually voting for Clinton, because on a vote, there's a two-vote swing if you do, and if you don't, there's only a one-vote swing." But in closing, I said, I asked him, I said, how are the calls and messages running?
Yeah.
50-50, 60-40 in favor of such? And he says, "Well, I won't get percentages, but I will say this. The vast majority of the calls are disappointed in Senator Crapo."
Yep. All right.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Eddie. We got to run. We're up against a hard break. Good stuff. KBOY News Time, 9:26.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
All right, we are back. We have 1,216,384 phone calls. Started off with Glenn of Caldwell. Glenn, good morning.
Well, good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
What's going on, Glenn?
Well, I agree with those that have said that for by grace are ye saved through faith,
mm-hmm.
and that not of yourselves, it is the gift of God. So God provides the forgiveness, and we other humans, if you look back a little ways, not too far, you can find wrongdoing.
Doesn't that work for the Clintons too?
Yes, of course. But okay. They need to confess. They need to admit and confess. And that's for everybody, not just them and Trump. It's for me.
Exactly.
So I'd like to submit this idea, though, that instead of harping about all that's wrong with the other party, let's build some planks on this platform. Let's put some planks in, like abolishing the minimum wage law and do away with the income tax and do away with a lot of property tax. And I could go on and on. There's a lot of room to build a platform and talk about the platform.
I agree with you 100%. We need to start talking about what we're going to do, not about what somebody did back when.
Sure, and there's one more thing. We could talk about a platform that would not only be good for the USA, but for all the countries of the world. And if we all had an import tax that would level the playing field so that our factories would stay here at home, and likewise with foreign countries.
Hmm.
They don't need to monopolize all of our factories. We just need to have some of them ourselves. So thank you for hearing me today.
Good stuff. Thanks, Glenn.
You know, and I like the way he thinks, because you see the TV commercials, you even hear the radio commercials, and during the debates, all you're really hearing from either candidate is why not to vote for the other one.
That's true. That is all you're hearing.
Give us some new ideas. Give us something that you know, would make the economy better, make the whole world's economy better.
Yep, I agree. All right, let's go to Hank of Boise. Hank, good morning.
Good morning. I might point out firstly that the districts that Trump got the least amount of votes versus Ted Cruz was the Utah 3rd District, which was Provo on south, and, of course, the Utah 1st District, which is Ogden and Brigham City, and then the Idaho 2nd District in eastern Idaho. And it's no mistaking it, Chaffetz was the first to jump ship on Trump down in Utah, and then followed by Simpson and Crapo over here in Idaho. And I think that has a lot to do with political conditions in the Great Basin in eastern Idaho with the Mormons.
Simpson has said that he never has really supported Trump from the very beginning. Apparently, he never made a statement saying that he did support him.
I'm going to my next point here pretty quick. And then Glenn Beck and his radio show reflects that kind of opinion in his show. A lot of thinking that's going on in the Red Basin. He's a Mormon himself over there on the other radio station, and he reflects a lot of thinking of those people. Now, my second point is, I think that there was part calculation and part panic in the calculations of Papel and Simpson in this. I don't think either one of them from the beginning favored Trump's candidacy. They saw it partly as an opportunity to get rid of Simpson, and it was partly panic over the mass media assault. And everyone at CNN and ABC, I mean, it's like you're in a battle, and all the artillery is opening on your position. You know, CBS News, NBC News, and they're all on broad, all on AIM. And, of course, what happened was is they achieved the effect that they wanted to. They caused the Republicans to stampede. They were hoping that this would be an opportunity to get rid of a candidate they didn't like. And at the same time, they weren't fully calculating because, in a sense, they were also acting out of fear and panic. Yep. I think that had a lot to do with Ryan's behavior, too. I hate to have Ryan lead me in battle. I mean, that guy needs panties.
Appreciate it.
All right, we're going to leave you there.
Yeah.
Thanks, Hank.
I've always been kind of curious how many people vote either their conscience or their heart or their brain, and how many vote simply strategically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. That's a good question.
It's like people who...
I know a lot of people who do vote strategically.
All of the there are lots of Democrats and lots of Republicans on Facebook, and I hear from both, and pretty much all the Democrats are saying... you have to vote for Hillary Clinton. Otherwise, that's a vote for Donald Trump, and we can't do that.
No, the Trump people are saying that, too.
They're saying the same thing. You have to vote for Donald Trump. Otherwise, it's a vote for Hillary Clinton, and we can't do that.
Yeah.
So
one vote swing, two vote swings, what they're calling. Let's go to Gary of Emmett. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, great day. Love spring and fall, my favorite seasons. Since 2001, 15 years, we have virtually been at war. We've been at war, and we're reminded all the time with that war coming to the shores of the United States through various terror attacks. And the people are fatigued, terribly fatigued. And Trump is that outsider that's standing up saying, you need to wake up from this bad dream, and I'm here to make the changes. And that's why none of this seems to bother his base. That's why he is Teflon. It is about the fact that America's fatigued through 15 years of virtual war. And if you go back to Bosnia-Herzegovina or even Desert Storm, you can see we've constantly been at war for 20 years at least now and in the same area. You know, I mean, if you consider Bosnia-Herzegovina, the bombing of Libya, and things like that, all the way back. And so here we sit as America. We're fatigued. We've been here. We just can't stand it anymore. We need, want a change, and he is that change, and that's why he's Teflon.
Okay. All right. Good stuff. Thank you.
You know, and
I think I agree with the fatigue part.
Yeah, he's got a point, too. I mean, not exactly war in every situation, but definitely conflict all over the world.
No question.
In that whole time.
Let's go to Luther of Chalice. Luther, good morning.
Well, by golly, I'm going to predict a future here. But right. First, I got to tell you, my mother, I went over to check on her, and she had the TV covered up with a towel so she could just watch the trailer on the bottom of the page, okay? And she's got the sound turned down, and she says, nope, more, no more.
Yeah, my wife,
and of course,
my wife left during the last debate, too. She's going to enough.
Yeah, tell her about radio, too, because we never show pictures of anything.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I'll have to teach her how to run the radio again. She's forgotten how to run the radio. But, you know, you look at this, for one thing, in the Middle East, we've been at war in the Middle East since the time of George Bush the First, a Republican war. How is Donald going to solve that? By getting us in deeper, okay? The possibilities that Trump will lose are out there, and if he does, the possibility of having problems with, shall we say, insurrections around the country could be real interesting. If he loses, now you're going to have people plotting against the government. Okay, this is not good, and we might have a Maunder minimum headed our way, in other words, low solar activity, which will drive the price of food up, and people that don't have a minimum wage will be paying a king's ransom for food. And Donald Trump, he was stalking Hillary on, you know, if you watch that, he was stalking her.
It did kind of look like it, yeah.
Or just trying to creep her out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, either one is a mental health issue. Yeah. I mean, there are thousands of mental health therapists signing on to say there has to be something done about this broken system that allows that person with no experience to go ahead and push the button, which is all he wants to really do. He just wants to push that button.
All right, Luther, we're up again on break. Thank you. KBOI News Time, 9:47.
A Meridian neighborhood is looking into a number of thefts that occurred. We'll tell you more about it coming up on 670 KBOI. Back now to Paul J. and Chris.
In 1945, okay, Luther was just talking about, he thinks Donald Trump wants to push the button, you know, and just blow the heck out of the
Middle
East.
Some people are worried about that.
In 1945, shortly after the atomic bombs were dropped on Japan, there were a lot of people who believed there would never be another war because they said, look how future wars will end.
Yep.
You know, one side will just nuke the other and then, you know, everybody dies and you have to surrender. Mm-hmm. And so they said there will never be. Well, every war since then, I guess you'd have to say, was a limited war.
Yeah.
Simply because they refuse to use nuclear weapons, or at least the United States does now.
Yeah. True stuff. Let's go to Rich of Boise. Rich.
Well, there's a couple of things. One, if Trump had been a halfway decent human being, he could have weathered through this, and his party would have stood behind him. I mean, he would just run a burn-and-slash campaign. He's just a terrible person, and people aren't sticking behind him. And the other thing is the Republicans, they're figuring they could get through 4 years of Hillary Clinton or a Democrat in there. It might even strengthen them, and actually, if they lost three elections in a row, they would kind of mellow out. They've been moving to the right more and more extreme. So it might actually help them. But the Republican politicians, they figure they could survive 4 years of a Democrat, but they're just afraid of having Trump in there for 4 years that he would just completely destroy the Republican Party. Because if people didn't go along with him in Congress, you know, Republican senators didn't like what he was doing, would he just start attacking them and everything? I think that's what they're looking at. They're kind of worried about the future of the party, and they think that he could just destroy it. And then there is that fact. I don't think Trump wants to start a nuclear war. I'm just afraid that, as irrational as he is, that he just might, probably not a nuclear war, but he might just cause trouble around the world with everybody. I mean, I just, you know, a guy that's that obsessed with vengeance when somebody irritates him, there's just something wrong with him. But I think they're looking at saving the Republican Party, is what I think. I think they're worried that he'll just split it in half, and then they'll just get wiped out and everything in 4 years.
Yeah. All right, good stuff. Do you think there'll be a third party, Chris?
Not really. I you know,
Nothing will splinter off out of this?
Gary Johnson has, in this particular, you know, a lot of Republicans, I think, Gary Johnson thought were going to become libertarians.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that there are that many of them that are that enthused about Gary Johnson. Some of them like the libertarian ideals.
Yeah.
But
they don't want to vote for him in particular. Well, how about the Democratic side and socialism?
No, the Democrats, it's like one of our earlier callers said, the Democrats have a tendency to stick together even if their candidate is far left or toward the middle.
Yeah. All right, we are out of time. Something to think about with Mike Rogers is next. Brought to you by Boise Church of Christ, where church is family. Check them out on the World Wide Web at boisechurch.org.
Now, something to think about with Mike Rogers.
Just call me, His Majesty. A student at the University of Michigan has pushed back against the PC police. The University of Michigan launched a new website designed to allow students to choose their own gender pronouns. So instead of he or she, students could be called Z, or they could create their own gender pronoun that matches their self-proclaimed gender identity. One student decided to test the limits of this thing. He entered into a website that henceforth he would like to be referred to as His Majesty. Another student called himself Mr. Grand Mufti, sir. An email to the students from the university said that asking students what their gender identity was is the most basic way to show respect and to cultivate an environment that respects all gender identities. They even had a committee that helped draft the guidelines. It was called the Pronoun Committee. They must have had some interesting meetings. I know what you're thinking. Whatever happened to good old-fashioned reading, writing, and arithmetic? Well, Your Highness, you'll have to ask the Pronoun Committee. Something to think about. I'm Mike Rogers.